listening to Trending with Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Timmery holds a master's degree in biblical theology, and she covers this week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Timmery.
We are back again for another episode of Trending. Coming up today, we'll be talking about feminism and its connection to Marxism and the real struggle this has created on university campuses. We'll also be talking about incredible family policies that are being implemented in other countries. You heard me talk a little bit about Hungary in the past, the decrease in abortion, uptake in new marriages, over 40% uptake in people getting married just in the last 9 years. We'll be talking about that and much more, including a decline in divorce in Hungary, teen suicide rates, and why boys need to be able to play and play outside. Very important to discuss this today with me is Dr. Philip Chavez of the Men's Academy, providing incredible insight to these key issues.
Yes. Look, great to be here, Timmery. Thanks again.
So recently, Dr. Chavez, you were, and we've been alluding to this, anyone who's been listening to Trending, you were recently asked to come on campus and talk to a college Catholic group, actually, about masculinity.
Well, the Catholic group, the Catholic fraternity there, which just started about a year ago, they asked me to speak to the entire student body, and it was open to the public as well.
Excellent. And so they actually asked you to speak on a topic that you don't usually use the terminology. They said, okay, come talk about patriarchy. And I remember you telling me, wow, I don't even use that language.
Yeah, I don't use the word patriarchy, I guess maybe because of the negative connotations, but I do speak of the reality. But this man made an interesting comment. I asked him when he could describe more what he wanted me to cover, and he says, you know, Dr. Chavez, it's the case that we ask men that they must stand up and become men, but he says we don't ask them to be patriarchs. And I thought that was an interesting comment.
Now, there's an important difference between wanting fathers to lead their families,
sure,
and wanting to have a male-dominated society. Ultimately, patriarchy is about having fathers being in the family and an active participant,
exactly,
and leader and protector.
Exactly.
And so what patriarchy is, truly, most women would not object to.
Sure. Yeah, as long as it's that sacrificial patriarchy where the father's genuinely serving his home, not being absent, not unwielding his authority improperly. Yes, women, they appreciate it.
So you're calling men into their mission, talking,
absolutely,
about the importance of men involved in family life, taking responsibility.
That's right.
And you were a little surprised by what you saw was happening to young men on college campuses.
That's right. The difficulty is, in this case, this particular Cal State school, Dominguez Hills, the men are told there, and it's not just implied, they're actually told they don't have a voice because they've been disaffected by what is called, European colonialism, which has so deeply affected the masculinity that we have today that is not proper and unfitting. Therefore, these men go through the school feeling as though their manliness is actually defective. And that even holds on the physical level. And so an act of transgender surgery reassignment for a male is an act of decolonizing his body. It's actually that bizarre. So it's unfortunate. Now, I felt this a lot with the men even shaking their hands, getting to know them. 4 years of telling them that they don't have a voice in the university has very much emasculated them, sadly.
This is the same age group where I talked to these young men just this past weekend. I was talking to a bunch of young men who said, yeah, I've never asked a girl on a date. And I'm looking at this guy.
Well,
it's like, okay, you are in your mid-20s, totally normal, interactive, good communicator individual. And it just actually dawned on him and surprisingly came to me the fact that, yeah, I've never asked a girl on a date. And he's going, wow. And he said, you know, I've used some social media apps at times, you know, for dating, but I've never actually asked a girl on a date. And I said, why? And he said, because I don't think girls want to be asked on dates. another person just over the last couple of weeks. I was asking, you know, why aren't men more kind of intuitive about, you know, helping to carry things or offering or trying to help open a door? Not that you have to go running in front of every woman that needs a door opened or run up to get carry something, but there's thoughtfulness. And I hear reverberating across many men's responses is that, well, we think that women are going to get angry because they're going to feel like they're incapable.
That's right. And so I think on that front, men are experiencing a lot of, I don't want to say necessarily hostility from women, but they do. They're, a lot of their experiences, they're experiencing a lot of distance. They're experiencing a lot of women being very defensive. And I think men are afraid to break into that in general. Mm-hmm. But I think even more so, I think today men aren't being exhorted to be fathers of families. It's not an ideal anymore.
But this is so shocking to me that a man on a college campus thinks that he needs to go through reconstructive surgery of his male anatomy.
Sure.
In order to be decolonized to meet the requirements that women are asking for. They're asking for a bunch of neutered men out there.
That's right. And the bizarre thing is they're asking, maybe they're asking that in some way, but it's absolutely what they do not want and they resent. So yeah, you have this dual battle here where the women are advocating things and promoting things which ultimately they don't want.
Absolutely. So let's talk about this from the perspective, because you made the comment to me that this is just absolute Marxism taking place on university campuses.
That's right.
And Marxism ultimately has its truest ties to the feminist movement.
Sure.
Ultimately, when we've seen these regimes of socialism, communism, Marxism being lived out, we've seen they failed. We've seen all over, especially Eastern Europe, being forced under communist Marxist ideologies. We've seen Russia. We've seen China. Who has the highest suicide rates for women? Who had, I mean, 3 in 4 women back in 1930 were having abortions because of communist Russia and the ideologies that were being forced forward. But at the heart of Marxism, it demands feminism, that women view men as the enemy.
That's right. So ultimately in Marxism, it's about state, which is supreme, and state should have control. So you basically have to dismantle the family and you have to dismantle religion. And so if you can make women completely equal to men and get them away from the family, one, you've broken down the family unit. And two, as Pius XII said many times, once you take the woman out of the home, you actually dismantle the faith from the home. So it's the women who really propagate the spirit, the mothers who propagate the spirit of the faith in the home. And so that's part of what a Marxist-Leninist society needs to inculcate. And of course, the more they can pit one against the other, as to especially women against men and their authority, and see them almost as enemies, that's necessary because you need the agitation of class struggle in order to keep everybody fighting and working on an individual level and breaking down. The class struggle breaks down, in this case, men against women. It ultimately breaks down the family and has its effect on religion, but it lends to a mentality that, oh, well, the state now must come in and control and make a right all things.
But the reality is that as they're focusing on this idea of everything has to be equal, everything has to be dispersed, right?
Sure.
It's to ignore certain people have gifts here.
That's right.
Other people have gifts there. Other people have weaknesses. Others have strengths. You know, there's this balance, but fundamentally, born as a male and female, it tries to disacknowledge the difference between men and women. Therefore, just like you said, destroying basic complementarity, basic communion conversation between men and women at its core. It's satanic in many ways.
It really is. And as I think we mentioned this one time or spoke about this one time, you know, it's when in complementary, it's when you see otherness, not equality. And it's otherness that makes things in life beautiful. It's otherness in a garden, you know, a variety and different giftings, if you want to say that about certain plants or flowers or whatnot. But it's otherness that makes men and women attracted to each other. In fact, perhaps one of the reasons why, you know, men aren't asking women out, you know, maybe those characteristics or traits which would actually be attractive to a man that a woman would exhibit that would make him want to ask her out. Maybe he's not seeing some of those today. He's seeing, you know, a woman who's professing, you know, I think the number one boast of women today is they're independent. They're self-sufficient. I can make it on my own. I don't need a man. And so a man in the order of nature, if he's around that, That doesn't welcome him to approach her.
A student recently said to me, I don't need a man, but I want a man. And she said it in the most genuine way. And it was in the midst of, I was sitting in at an event I was speaking at in a women's discussion group. And I'd already intervened a lot. And I thought, okay, I'm just going to leave this one because we've had a lot of profound insights here. But it just stood out to me. I understand what she is saying. But to make that statement is to completely divorce yourself from the basic understanding that there's a balance in society of strengths between the sexes. And so if we had zero men in society, there would be something missing in tasks that women would have to step up and do.
Yes.
But there would be very different level of toil and interaction that would happen in trying to accomplish them.
Yeah. And I think what's happening too is we're not really lifting up the things that can be exalted in a woman. In some respects, we're exalting many things in her that we would otherwise want to see in men. But there's things, the complementary aspects of a woman. You know, she humanizes a man. She offers grace in his life. So women add a level of civilization. They civilize men. They inspire men in the way no one else can inspire. Mm-hmm. And so there's many things that boys, men, young men need to be woken up to in ways that women could influence their lives. And if women, you know, can evoke these out of men, I think you'd find men rising up more and being more engaged and wanting to have relationships and ultimately having a family.
Absolutely. And that's the truth of it. The more we can find this codependence, which is what to be human is. From a Catholic perspective, to understand the Trinity is a communion of persons, not of isolation. So this pro-autonomy argument is so radically opposed to basic human nature. We're born into a family.
Timmery will be right back. Send her a tweet at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
2 years ago, there was a show on Netflix release called 13 Reasons Why. Early on, I jumped on and started seeing major problems with this show that essentially showed a young girl who committed suicide but recorded these tapes of 13 reasons blaming people for why she committed suicide. It shows a graphic rape scene and the graphicness of how to commit suicide. Here's the reality. Ever since the beginning of television and the regular use of it, studies have been done showing that when there is a suicide depicted on television and the months following, suicide astronomically goes up. And so this is exactly what was predicted to happen back in April of 2017 when 13 Reasons Why was released. Dr. Philip Chavez is here to discuss this with me. He's from the Men's Academy. I'll be really interested to hear your insight. Essentially, what has come out in a study that was released from the Journal of American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry is that essentially there was a massive 30% spike in suicide, specifically among young boys.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that what you find too in youth a lot, there a lot of them are depressed and they think of actually killing themselves for a variety of reasons. But in some ways, they don't have either the permission to do so, or they just don't have the inner strength to do so. In other words, I don't want to use the words courage, but the audacity to do so. So once they're given permission, or, you know, by what they see, and once they're given a method or an increase in their motives, it can push them off the edge. I think many people are on the brink of it. I don't know if, you know, not so much as far the execution of it, but they are on the brink in terms of sometimes the desire for it to end their own lives. And sometimes it just takes an extra inspiration to put them over the fence, over the edge.
We're living in a time of serious mental health crises in our culture. This is something that is highly discussed on college, university campuses, in middle school campuses now. We're seeing that it's often discussed in work environments. You know, the reality of taking a mental health day is perfectly acceptable now. The reality is that this topic of suicide should never have been portrayed as it was. And I have to tell you, I was shocked how many people came back at me in April of 2017 saying that this show was artistic and sensitively done.
Probably because it showed the suicide and the sympathetic and maybe probably even romanticized it. Could that be why they loved it? What is it that attracted them or led them to see that this was actually something maybe good or something beneficial or even entertaining?
I know some people say we need to talk about suicide. And okay. I could understand that. But I don't know that talking about suicide should take place within the context of a TV show or a movie.
Sure.
Maybe that should take place in the context of a home,
sure.
a lecture,
sure.
as someone reaching out to someone who's struggling. You know,
sure.
just because media is a powerful tool to communicate and teach does not mean that it should depict everything.
That's right. And the media has a way of reaching that part of us that that wants to romanticize, that wants to have certain ideals, that wants to push things to the limit. And I have a feeling that it's those inspirations which have probably in great measure increased the rate of suicide.
Well, we live in a time, too, where we're looking at the crises within the church, crises in society, the shocking and sorrowful exposure of the Me Too movement in Hollywood.
Sure.
Of essentially the same Me Too movement imploding within the Catholic Church and the awful things that we saw from people who should have never been acting in such a way. It points to a real crisis of a struggle mentally to take responsibility for our actions, to be able to cope, to feel that we are loved unconditionally.
Sure.
All of this is closely related.
I think you're right. I think, once a person sees or believes, rather, that they're not valued, that they don't see value in their life, in their personhood, in their ability to contribute, and don't really, for whatever reason, don't experience love, and there's a variety of reasons, or they've been cut off from it, or betrayed by it, which is actually common too. These people, this could leave people in a deep depths of despair, and all the more so if their relationship is, if there's somehow some severance with their parents and parental figures who can help them, guide them, and compassionate with them and love them. Many young people can be led down just a very bad path, if not suicide, then addiction, or other forms of depression or mental illness for which they really need help.
What are things that can lead to suicide among young people? Having experienced a divorce within your home, having experienced,
sure.
Maybe the child is what psychology would call gender nonconforming. They're not conforming with their biological sex. A lot of that has to do with upbringing and the brokenness of parental relationships, abortion, sexual activity too soon and too early, especially specifically
sure.
among young women. These are real issues that kids are being exposed to sooner and sooner.
That's right. And the sense of failure. Men, of course, as we're talking about men in older age, will commit suicide when some business venture has failed. But what they're seeing in some of the Asian cultures is that students will commit suicide if they don't properly succeed in their grades. And so a deep sense of failure, which would redound to a sense of life failure, some kids will commit suicide. So for which reason, maybe we shouldn't put, or it's unfortunate they put so much stock in their academics that they would actually see it as a life failure.
Well, and we could actually say that within the Asian culture, this increased risk of suicide, if grades, let's say, are not as high as they should,
sure.
the young person ultimately feels failure, and that's the connection. Same thing with a child who is what you'd call gender nonconforming. They're having a hard time identifying with their physical biology and anatomy as their sex.
Sure.
These kids, so many studies show, look at the work of so many of the psychologists who are willing to push up against American Psychological Association and looking
sure.
and saying, look at these statistics. When children felt like they were not affirmed by their specifically father, it
That's
led
right.
to effeminacy developing in the child. They would reject what was masculine, or there became an obsession with what was masculine as they felt excluded and developed these different characteristics. Same thing between this and the feeling of failure. Young people, when they think they don't measure up, can go to drastic levels if not affirmed.
Sure. And oftentimes it's the mother and father both, they have their own ways of affirming and giving identity. A mother, I think, gives identity at the deepest level of acceptance. But in the further growth of the child, it seems like the father becomes more important for men and women both. And he imparts a kind of sex identity. He invalidates girls as being women, invalidates boys to be men in a way that a mother necessarily can't. But he does invalidate something of the final perfection to the maturity for which they should reach. And when that's not confirmed, when that's not had, I know in the case of men, they can actually find themselves, try to prove themselves in very dangerous things and kill themselves in so doing.
Mm-hmm. The issue of suicide is a very serious issue. And so it's frustrating that it took 2 years later to really come out and talk about, well, here's a study showing that, yes, indeed, teen suicide did elevate right after, especially in the month following the expose of 13 Reasons Why on Netflix. And so here's why I wanted to talk about it, because the reality is that so much of what we're consuming is influencing us in a profound way.
Sure.
And it's funny because recently, well, it's interesting. My sister's like, you know, I really actually do believe that, like, you think that TV and the phone is of the devil. And it just made me laugh. I said, no. And it's funny because my husband's like, yeah, I kind of agree with you. And so I kind of just said, okay, if you think that, I said, one, you don't listen to my show. But two, I said, here. And I gave like three facts having to do with phones and three facts having to do with media content. And both of them went, oh, yeah. Okay, we see where you're coming from. Influence, addiction, exposure really does have an impact on us when we're consuming content, when we're becoming negligent to other things, when we're missing basic human communication.
Connection. Yeah. Yeah, and that's unfortunately what all these devices and electronic things can do to us. And yeah, it can lead us to a very impersonal way of life. In fact, what's happening now, boys are finding, and one of the reasons they probably can't connect with girls is because they're not connecting with one another anymore. They're finding their buddies now online and playing games with them. So a lot of boys today have virtual friendships, which they're deeply ingrained in. And so, yes, it would be quite a jump for them to ask a girl out if they're so steeped in virtual relationships.
And that's a beautiful level of connection that they're finding these communities. The problem is that all internet communication, all, for example, online dating, everything's oriented to in-person, person-to-person relationships.
That's right.
And so I said, I don't think that TV and movies and the phone are all the devil. I said, it's not what I think. I said, I think that our overuse, we are ignorant as to how much we're overusing it, and it's damaging our ability to connect,
Absolutely.
Like you said.
Or it's interfering or interrupting our ability to connect. And, you know, how many times do we see people on their phones walking down the street and everybody's on their phones or whatnot? And, at the minimum case scenario, it's somewhat interrupting heart-to-heart communication.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're seeing an intensity in job dissatisfaction today. And it's among people who are in front of screens for too long a period of time, not having enough interaction. I think it's a really important topic to take on. But here's the reality. You and I can make simple changes. Find more time to be present and less time to depend on our technology.
Yes. And those times should be really when we're eating, too, because it's a natural time we do rest and we do commune with others. And I do think, the more we stay away from communal eating together, the more these negative effects and disconnection is actualized or realized.
The power of a meal is so important. So many psychologists are asking, how often do you have meals together as a family? It shows the life and the maturity and the joy and interaction of the family the more meals are taking place.
That's right.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Timmery.
In studio with me today is Dr. Philip Chavez of the Men's Academy. Many of you who are regular listeners to Trending will remember over the last couple years, I started pointing to Hungary and their family policy that's really being implemented and the fruits are showing as of 2017. Back in 2010, divorce was high, abortion numbers were high, and few people were getting married. Since then, the trends have changed, and it's something that is worthy to note. Marriage rates have increased by a whopping 43% per this article.
It's amazing, yeah.
The divorce rate has dropped by 22.5%, and 33% fewer women are aborting their children just in the time span of 7 years.
Yeah.
I would love to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, it's amazing progress in one sense, at least for the preservation of the family, the preservation of life. You know, it's interesting, though, I know a country like Hungary has to be a little bit careful. It's been steeped in socialism for so long, because much of what they're trying to promote in the family, I think, actually interrupts natural family function. In other words, I think it's right, yes, tax breaks be given to families, tax breaks given to more children. But maybe not, which is happening, the state actually paying off your mortgage or paying off your car loans. You know, I think we run into something's problematic, but even more so, the state's got to be very, very careful not to take over the role of motherhood. And I think, you know, in communist countries, well, and what we're seeing in our own country, is motherhood is becoming monetized mm-hmm. too much.
Yeah.
Taking care of our children, preparing meals, and all these other things. You know, it used to be women used to volunteer in the parks and recreation, you know, for activities for children. And so, but in any case, and so what's happening in Hungary, what they're trying to do, too, is I saw that one figure where they're trying to set up 21,000 extra daycare centers in a little town like in a little country like Hungary. They're actually paying grandparents to watch their grandchildren, and so we have to be very careful not to assume, not to take over, or rather monetize the roles that should be naturally taken by the family. I mean, the parents should, grandparents should volunteer, you know, to do that. I guess, too, one of my concerns is, too, I mean, it sounded sort of good that if a woman had four children, that she no longer had to pay taxes. Well, it sort of looks good, but what about if the family has four children? Or if the father has four children? It doesn't say that. If a woman has four children, she's exempt. So, they could run into the problem, too. A woman will start having children just so they can get out of a tax structure. And again, in this case, it would be children who can be already taken care of. So they've got to be careful not to inculcate, you know, laws and measures which would interrupt the natural functions of the family.
You have to be careful not to become a welfare state, right?
Yeah, that's another way of putting it, yeah.
And this is a challenge. So tax break for a mother only four could lead to, well, I won't get married. I won't marry
that's
the father.
Right.
I'll just live with him. And then that lack of commitment destroys the man's mission. And eventually he leaves. I have a dear friend whose girlfriend refused to marry him for a number of years because she got more welfare being a single mother.
That's right. Yeah, and so I it could be, I mean, I hope it's not the case, but maybe some people are encouraged to be married because now they can buy a house, instead of living together, they can buy a house together.
Now, on the contrasting side, where these policies I think are very helpful, I think in and of themselves, they're great policies. For example, giving the tax breaks.
Sure.
Or when you get married, you get a little bit of a tax
sure.
break. You know, when you have children, you get a little bit of a tax break to lighten
exactly.
the load of family life. Because we're living in a time right now where specifically so many people here, let's say in the United States, have student loans and they're delaying marriage.
That's
they're
right.
delaying entering the priesthood and religious life.
That's right.
Because they cannot afford even a basic home environment in yeah. addition to their student loan payments.
Yeah, so this is where, yeah, the state has to be very conscientious that students are, rather, yeah, when they aren't students, that they don't incur too much debt, and people have to be very careful about the way they spend, and we can't expect the government to bail us out. But yes, if the government can relieve the family for its functions and help and support the family, these results that you spoke about, it's good to see.
So much of the family policy coming out of Hungary, I don't know if you know this, but it was actually inspired much by St. John Paul the Great's work, Veritatis Splendor, among others. And so the example of the Hungary family policy has actually been presented at the Vatican as we're trying to implement a Catholic type of vision of family. Now, from the perspective of, we are seeing a 33% decrease in the number of women having abortions, over 40% increase in marriages. They're doing something right. Now, the problem is if the pendulum swings too far in creating a welfare state rather than saying there is support for living a family-oriented life. We're seeing too many people die. We're seeing too few children.
That's right.
That's where the culture has to, you know, for certain periods of time, certain tax breaks might be necessary.
That's right. And they are. And again, the state always has to look at the good of the family. You know, as we know, as we're taught in church teaching, as Plato taught, as Aristotle taught, as Thomas Aquinas taught, you know, if a society is made up of families, it's not made up of individuals. And so the more we could strengthen the family and allow fathers and mothers to fulfill their roles, and the more we can enable that, the stronger that society ultimately will become.
I want to get your perspective on this because I think the two really do tie together. That's Dr. Philip Chavez of the Men's Academy. For those who are just joining us, I'm Timmeri Jaja. You're listening to Trending with Timmeri. So there was a study came out from the state, from Stanford, Stanford, right? And this study is basically showing the stages of relationships. So I just want to throw this out here because I know I didn't give this to you. So essentially, the difference between 1970 and 2010. It gives examples of marriages. And I'm going to give you this specific statistic that I pulled.
Okay.
So in 1970, if you had been dating 2 years, 43% of those couples were married. In 2010, if you had been dating 2 years, not even 18% of couples are married today. Less than half after 2 years of dating than what it used to be back in 1970.
Sure.
Really interesting that we've seen such a decline in marriages. I really do think that looking to models like Hungary provide an example for how young people are really struggling on a financial level, not even looking at the cultural level, to make it into a safe, somewhat, let's say, reasonable married life financially.
That's right. And so I think what's happening, couples are actually finding themselves in debt at the time they're seriously dating and whatnot. And so even college debt now has become a factor in divorce. So yes, I mean, on the financial level, things have become more difficult. And of course, it's more difficult to buy a house. It's very difficult even to pay rent.
But speak to this from the perspective of men and their need to provide a home, to provide an income for the family.
Yes, men fundamentally, they go where they succeed. And there's something very fragile about a man. You know, it's very hard for him to step up to something where he's not going to succeed. And so if he's not succeeding, maybe as a provider, that will disaffect him and discourage him. So that and his other roles, I think it's very important. But I think ultimately too, I think what's happening more in the current age, the statistics for dating for a while, not getting married, I think it's for the difficulty is more inherent, the inability to bond or to bond well with the woman. I think men are more and more, I think, as they're losing this masculinity and failing to embrace it, or even as I'm learning more and more, failing to even know what it is. It's hard to relate to a woman well if you're not clear on your own role, your own strengths, and really rise up to embrace those and live those out.
I think this is a great opportunity for women as well to allow that space for men. I was talking to a group of young girls recently. You know, women are object so much to men spending time together, male friendships. You know, we've got to appreciate and respect that men learn, I think, sometimes the most by being forged, challenged, and taught by example of other men. So you want a man in your life to be a better man, encourage him to foster those good male relationships.
That's right. If he can give and take love well as a son, give and take well love well as a brother and as a man, then he can give and take well, love well as a husband and as a father. And I find that, in my opinion, which I hold very strongly, if a man isn't well found in giving, taking love with men and those healthy male relationships, he's going to have struggle relating to the woman in his life.
This is where I think so many, and this is also what identifies, or should I say affirms, sexual identity.
Sure.
Specifically for young men, if you look at the studies, when young men are affirmed in their sexuality by their fathers or
other men,
it really changes the way they develop. Because ultimately, ultimately, all children are born and cared for by their mothers, right?
That's
but they're at a certain point for the boys, there needs to be a little bit of a separation in order for him to learn, well, what is it to be a man?
That's right.
But when young men do not have good examples and models,
that's right.
It might be 20 years later, it might be 15 years later. Yeah. These boys are 40 years later. You still need models of masculinity surrounding you.
Yes, there's an element where masculinity is bestowed, and same with femininity too. So yes, men do need those figures, but they need men to reach into their hearts as well. I think what's happening too, it's not just a matter of examples, but real guidance from mentor figures who know really how to reach into the heart of a male. And it's when that happens to a man, even when he enters the priesthood or he becomes married, is engaged with a woman, or is allied to a woman, that he needs the validation from a male mentor to strengthen him in that relationship and to validate him and to confirm him and to really to exhort him too when things get tough. Because if he doesn't have that support too, when things get rough, he will find himself distancing himself from relationship and not engaging in that hardship or trial.
Some fantastic resources I'll recommend is yours, Dr. Philip Chavez, is themensacademy.org. You can find great resources on formation for men of all ages. But also, I really do think maybe you're dating someone and you just want to encourage them to have some sort of resource. Check out The Art of Manliness. I love listening to their podcast. I learned so much, and I think that it's a great opportunity for men to get into a little bit of a culture and a group that will encourage strong, truth-centered, faith-filled masculinity.
Amen.
Timmery will be right back. Send her a tweet at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Don't miss an episode of Trending. We are available on iTunes, YouTube. We broadcast live on social media. We're available also on Spotify. So head over to radiotrending.com. You can find your favorite way to subscribe to the podcast so that you don't miss an episode. With me is Dr. Philip Chavez, and this article I've been wanting specifically to talk to you about. It comes from The Military Wife and Mom. The title of the article is The Overlooked Reason Why Kids Don't Listen. She's getting to the heart of how children are being pushed to the point, specifically boys, where they're afraid, basically.
Sure.
They can't play. She gives one example when she's at the park, essentially, with her kids. Her kids are, instead of swinging across the monkey bars, because I think one of her kids might not have had the strength to, he's kind of slithering over the top, right? This is totally me. I did not have the strength to swing across the monkey bars, so I'd climb across the top. And all of a sudden, one of the moms walks up to her and says, "Your son's on top of the monkey bars. Just thought I'd let you know that he doesn't fall and get hurt." Shortly after, two kids walked up and started saying, "Hey, he's on top of the monkey bars. He's going to get hurt." And she's talking about how over and over again, she has other kids watch by terrified as her kids are playing a little harder on the merry-go-round or climbing around the playground in a not so conventional way.
Sure.
What's interesting is that it's instilling fear in so many children. I think this is one of the big points that she emphasizes. Kids aren't allowed to just play for the sake of playing. They're being forced to stay inside now.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate on a number of fronts. But just looking at nature itself, Timmery, the child physically changes very quickly. I mean, gosh, you see this in your young, maybe nieces or nephews or kids, you know, if you don't, you know, I have a number of them. And if I don't see them after 2, 3, 4 months, gosh, next time I see them, I'm just amazed how much they've grown. Now, with that physicality, if there's actually on the order of nature, if there's much growth physically, it means there needs to be a much nurturing physically. This is why much activity is needed by children and not so much sedentary things. Because if they don't get that, then they won't develop properly physically. Okay, so aside from all the focus things and how they get their moods and whatnot, if they don't develop or have a chance to really engage much physically, which children need, they're not going to develop properly physically. And we're seeing this now where I think what's happening is either children are often now becoming either too thin because they're not really using their bones and all the rest, and or two, some are actually gaining weight. So we're seeing children who are not as physically fit too, as well as all these other things that are happening to them.
Even bone mass.
Exactly.
By how we physically interact. And here's the problem.
Exactly.
Kids are being, don't run so fast. Don't do that. Don't jump. Don't play. Don't do this. To the point where they're being corralled, specifically young boys, inside. And so what we're actually seeing on a basic level of human development, and this is something for those who don't know, I teach Pilates. And so I work a lot with people who have maybe had strokes in the past, hip replacements, knee surgeries, you name it. But some of the things we're trying to keep, especially with the older population, is proprioception and vestibular input. Proprioception is spatial awareness, right? Being able to interact with our body without having to see everything, right? And these are some of the really important elements of how we interact and move. Yet, you know, whether it's control of our body without seeing it, or being able to move in space, right? These are, and have control. These things are not being developed in children.
Right.
And actually, studies are showing that certain ages need a specific amount of time outside. I mean, for example, toddlers, not necessarily outside, but in activity. It shows that studies are saying that based on age-based recommendations, toddlers need at least 5 to 8 hours of active play per day, preferably outdoors.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's the connection with nature, which brings us wisdom. You know, it's interesting, as Aristotle would speak, the most important sense that we have, oftentimes we think it's sight. No, it's actually touch.
Mm-hmm.
It's the sense of touch which affects our intelligence the most. And so the more exposure we have to nature, actually the more potentially intelligent we become. This is what I've noticed too when I've used to study with certain scholars. Sometimes those raised on a farm, when they were trained well in philosophy and theology, they would usually excel above the others.
Mm. Those tactile physical interactions.
Connection with nature that teaches them much about the natural order and by extension, the supernatural order.
Well, this is part of the concern with the overuse in education with technology is if the kids aren't developing proprioception, vestibular awareness, it really impacts their development. I mean, just looking at these numbers, I had no idea. I was very blessed. I grew up in the mountains. I grew up homeschooled, right? And so we had the ability at the end of the day, what did I look forward to most? I was a little bit of a tomboy. I loved playing outside for hours upon hours. This is what me and my next door neighbor waited for. And so essentially, we had the opportunity to spend some of this time frame outdoors. But I remember the brief period of time when I was in a classroom setting in elementary school. That was such a restricted period of time. There was such a longing. It was so, there was so much oversight when it took place. Sometimes kids need a little bit of room to to make physical mistakes and get their knees scraped up a little.
That's right. And to exercise a kind of independence. You know, there's a certain amount of freedom you must give a child to explore on their own. I grew up, I did grow up in the country, but I did grow up in places where there were fields and even a creek where we had a lot of bamboo. And so my brothers and I, we made everything out of bamboo. Forts, we made all our kites, you know. We did all those things, and we learned how to make things really with our own hands. And that's a big part of it too, to be able to craft with your own hands using the materials of nature is invaluable for a child.
Well, I remember today, I don't think you'd see a lot of kids doing this. I remember my neighbor and I in the summers, we'd take off and we'd go hiking. And I remember one time, it was years later, we used to take this one specific hike all the time, make our way down to a watering hole, go swimming. And one time we took my mom with us. And we're scaling down the side of a mountain, literally hand-to-hand rock climbing down the rocks. And I asked my mom, she doesn't remember this. And I think she blocked it out. And we're climbing
too traumatic,
down.
Huh?
And my mom comes with us. And, you know, we used to go and we take my baby sister. And we just cling the baby, my baby sister onto one of our backs or something.
Gosh.
And we'd start climbing. And I'm sure if I were to look back on it now, it's not as intense as it sounds. But I remember my mom going, oh my gosh, you guys have been doing this. With my younger sister, a few years old, I just couldn't believe it. She was shocked. But the reality is we were always fine. If anything, maybe a little slip, but we were okay. You know, there are things that we were doing. We had that freedom to learn and push limits sometimes.
Sure. And well, the reality is too, you know, Timory, you could have gotten hurt. But it was still proper for you to do many of those things. And, you know, I mean, that's just inherent in nature that even in some of these developmental things, which are important, we could get hurt, you know. I mean, it used to be understood that when a boy was growing up, you know, centuries past, he was engaged in the combat arts because it helped him on a number of levels. But in doing so in that enterprise, boys would frequently get hurt, and sometimes severely. But it's just, it's still, it's part of nature that even though there are those times where we can get hurt, not that we look for that, but we nonetheless, it shouldn't prohibit a child from experiencing the freedom and getting the exposure of those things and activities they need exposure mm-hmm. to.
And the reality is they're showing, for example, toddlers, preschool age kids need between 5 to 8 hours of active play, preferably sure. outside. School age kids need about 5 hours of physical active play, again, preferably outside. And last, we'll talk about adolescents. They need at least 3 to 4 hours a day of physical activity. Well, where are we getting this physical activity? We're not, because
that's
kids
right.
are spending an average of 8, sometimes up to 11 hours a
that's
day
right.
on screens.
Right. You know, maybe we as parents, maybe we'd find it more easy to realize this if we got physical activity ourselves. You know, even a person who's older in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, I mean, even we need in our older years, you know, 1 or 2 hours of where we're actually physically engaged. You know, this teaching Pilates yourself. Adults need a certain amount of physical activity too. So if, you know, I wonder if they grew in an awareness of the physical activity they would need, that would help them in their keenness to see that their children would need that, and all the more so.
Oh, and I remember when I finally started teaching Pilates, it was like a break from the rest of my work. You know, all the reading,
right.
all the studying, all the writing on the computer, it allowed me to physically engage something, and my energy level went up because I was,
sure.
my body was physically engaged in an activity rather than kind of this just isolation, this sedentary
sure.
element.
And to state the obvious, the mood level grows up too. And so mm-hmm. even with children, once they get a lot of this out of the system, they're just in better spirits. They don't fight and clash with their brothers and sisters so much when they get it all out on the ball field or just out in nature. And so there's so much benefit to be had when children do get that physical exposure.
Well, and that's ultimately part of the woman's point here, the military wife, is that the most overlooked reason why your kids don't listen is because you're not allowing them the physical activity they need. So then they're always feeling corralled. They're always having to listen.
That's right.
They need free, unstructured play.
That's right. And yeah, in proportion to the child's age and experience and ability, we should try to even, yeah, be generous with that and allow children, you know, to go to the next level. You know, obviously there's certain things you want to withhold a 3-year-old doing that you'd let your 6-year-old do, and maybe your 12-year-old. But it's I think we should see even growth and development as we do in virtue. It's not such a bad thing to kind of push to that next level when a child is ready for that next level.
Dr. Chavez, where can people find you?
They can find me at themensacademy.org, and there's you can get onto my Podbean and download a number of recordings for free on men's development, men's spirituality.
Coming up this next month in July, you have an event going on just north of San Diego.
That's right. About an hour directly north of San Diego at Holy Martyrs Parish in Murrieta, California. I'll be talking about the basics of manliness and how to actually forge that in a spirit of prayer. And I'll even cover some things on the clergy crisis, what happened, the emasculation there, to help demystify that for men.
You can find out more at themensacademy.org. Don't miss an episode of Trending. You can head over to radiotrending.com, head over to the contact page, let us know if you like the show, and maybe there's a topic you would like to hear discussed in the near future. You guys have a blessed week. Pray for me as I am on the road traveling. I'll be in, I think, 5 or 6 different states just this month in June, so I hope to see you while I'm on the road.
This has been Trending with Timmery. To learn more about Timmery Millington, visit timmery.com.